Get started on your painting project this summer and save big money at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial, so you can get a professional, corrosion-resistant finish on every project. Save big money on Rust-Oleum Spray Paint now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The City of Light, Paris. It's been a beacon in the imaginations of many when it comes to travel destinations. Passionate lovers, food connoisseurs, and fashion devotees flock to the world-famous French capital. But little do they know what lies buried beneath their feet. A dark world where light does not touch, that extends for hundreds of miles in every direction, where the bones of millions lay, dug up from the surface where they once rested and transported to the depths of the abyss by wooden cart, the souls beneath are far from lonely. Welcome to the catacombs of Paris. Welcome to the kingdom of the dead. Hey everybody, welcome to the 21CD podcast. I'm your ghost, John, as always. Today we're diving deep into the catacombs of Paris with part one of this massive two-part episode. Part two will come out on Thursday, and there's some stuff in here that you're really not going to want to miss, because not only have I not seen some of these topics and some of this content in other YouTube videos, but I also include a never-before-told story from one of my friends back in my military days who had a bizarre experience in the catacombs himself. So you're definitely going to want to stick around for that. There's tons of visual content in this two-part episode. So if you guys are listening on the podcast, you might want to head over to the YouTube at some point if the visuals are important to you. I'm going to be showing you lots of clips from inside the catacombs, lots of pictures, and it's pretty cool stuff. I'm not going to lie. I was kind of surprised. I've always been really interested in the catacombs, but when I started really looking at watching every single YouTube video and doing my own research on it, I started realizing that this place is actually pretty awesome. So if you guys are interested in seeing that, please head over to the YouTube 21CD podcast. But if you're not, don't worry, I will be describing everything in detail. So I do encourage everybody to find us on Instagram and YouTube. I do encourage you to follow those platforms because you will get updates about the 21CD podcast and what we're doing next. And in the very near future, we're going to be doing some awesome stuff. We're going to be going out into the woods. We're going to be going exploring more, and I'm going to be taking you along with me. So you'll definitely want to see that kind of stuff. And for that reason, I encourage you to follow me on all platforms so that you guys can be informed and kept in the loop and never miss an update. You will forever regret it if you miss out. Please like, follow, share, and rate wherever you are. That's what helps the podcast grow. I know it doesn't seem like you might not feel like you're doing something when you just hit the thumbs up, but you really are. You're keeping me in the algorithm, because eventually what happens if the video stops getting views and the video stops getting likes or the podcast stops getting watched, what ends up happening is I fall deeper into the algorithm with no way to claw myself out. So every little interaction that you guys give me is essential to keeping this podcast at the top of the list of paranormal, supernatural, and just generally weird stuff. So thanks for all your help. Keep it up. You guys are the best. I'll never forget the OGs that were here in the beginning. And without further ado, let's get into the episode. Deep beneath the heart of Paris, a labyrinth of bones lay hidden, a subterranean world where the living dare not tread. The catacombs, a macabre masterpiece of death, whisper tales of the forgotten, tales that echo in the cold, damp darkness. On moonless nights, and armed with nothing but a flashlight and an insatiable curiosity, fearless explorers descend like snakes and spiders through cracks in the pavement into the abysmal void below. The air grows thick with the stench of decay, lost time, and poisoned pools of water. As the explorers, two teenage boys, venture deeper, the walls begin to close in around them like the skeletal fingers of the dead. They delve deeper. The catacombs unfold before them like a surreal underworld. Skulls and bones line the walls, silent witnesses to centuries gone by. The adventurers, initially caught up in the excitement, soon realize that they have wandered further than they intended to. Panic begins to set in as the passages seem to shift and change, leading them into an unfamiliar place that does not match the map in their muddy, quivering hands. Their flashlights flicker, casting long, distorted shadows on the skeletal walls as they realize that they have been down here hours longer than they expected to be. Somewhere behind them, before them, and all around them, they think they hear whispers, too faint to discern, murmur through the darkness, playing tricks on their anxious minds. The air becomes heavier, like sand, with an unsettling stillness, and a pervasive sense of dread wrapping around the imposters like a suffocating shroud. They should not be here. They should not be here at all. The travelers quicken their pace, now hoping to find an exit. All desire to see more of this wretched and mysterious place fading. But the catacombs seem to conspire against them. The bones whisper secrets of forgotten souls, and as the boys stumble through the labyrinth, they feel the gaze of unseen eyes upon them, scouring them, observing their next panicked move. A distant sound echoes somewhere down one of the never-ending hallways, a low, haunting hum that seems to emanate from the very walls themselves. The boys, disoriented and gripped by fear, follow the eerie melody, hoping that it will lead them to the safety of fellow adventurers in the depths. But the tunnels twist and turn unnaturally, leading them deeper into the heart of the catacombs. Their flashlights flicker and dim. They are dimming lower and lower with every single step. It becomes obvious that the batteries in the torches will soon die, and down here, when the light dies, so too do the ones left behind in the dark. They begin to yell. The lads scream and shout, hoping anyone can hear them, as one of their lights suddenly goes dark. But of course, nobody can. And if anyone does, they do not come to their aid. The second torch loses life, plunging the boys into total darkness. Darkness like they have never felt before. The cold, wet blackness of the grave. Again, the whispers surround them, and they can no longer tell if they are real or part of their imagination. For a brief while, they claw and feel along the walls, hoping help could be just around a bend or just through another doorway, but hopelessness was all that they found. They huddled together on the floor, littered with human bones, trying to keep warm. But something, or someone, was indeed watching them. 3 days later, news sources would report. Two teenage boys were rescued after spending three terrifying days lost inside the catacombs beneath Paris. The two boys, aged 16 and 17, were found by a search team equipped with rescue dogs Wednesday morning after getting lost in the maze of tunnels beneath the streets. The boys were rushed to the hospital and treated for hypothermia. A spokesperson for the Paris Fire Department credited the dogs with rescue, as if you need more reasons to love dogs. Though a small section of the catacombs is open to the public, there are hundreds of miles of tunnels that form an eerie maze beneath the streets. While being trapped in a creepy dark maze is enough to spook anyone, the catacombs are filled with the bones of more than 6 million people. The series of tunnels were filled with bones after the cemeteries of Paris became too full in the 18th century. As a public health issue, the city removed the dead from the cemeteries and placed them beneath the streets in a series of abandoned tunnels that were previously used when limestone quarries were mined to build the city above. Although entering the catacombs is illegal, the tunnels are popular among young kids and partiers, despite the tunnels being completely dark and the ambient temperature hovering around 59 degrees Fahrenheit. Both boys would survive, this time, though they never spoke of what they witnessed in the catacombs. Some close friends and family report that the boys now suffer from nightmares and paranoia. Who knows? Maybe they still hear the whispers of the dead, or maybe it's something much more ancient and evil that follows them, having ascended with them to the world above. Pretty crazy. That's a true story, by the way. That happened in 2017, I believe. These two boys went down into the catacombs and got lost. And this isn't necessarily a rare thing. This happens often, that people will get lost in the catacombs because we're going to get into it. Don't you worry. We're barely scratching the surface of the content of this episode, but these catacombs, even though they're mapped, they're not like, the maps are completely unreliable because they're always changing and people will hide passageways and destroy passageways beneath the surface. They'll fill them in or they'll break them down. Like, it's very easy to get lost in the catacombs. But I want to get into a little bit about how the catacombs became what they are today. So we're going to do a little history lesson here. Between 1780 and 1814, Paris would finally recognize that it has a body problem. Their graveyards were full to the brim. They had been piling bodies in the walls of existing structures and even creating standing structures to house the recently and not so recently deceased. It has been said that there was nowhere in Paris that did not smell of decomposing human bodies. Like, they literally had so many corpses that they had nowhere else to put them, and so they just started piling them on top of each other, literally within the walls of their buildings. There's a story of a soap salesman. Like many others, he had a shop set up in a prominent square in order to sell his wares. His soaps, perfumes, and candles were all delicious in scent, but regardless of this fact, they were fashioned from the most readily available fat, the fat of humans. This was not uncommon in Paris in the late 1700s, in a place where human bodies were the most accessible resource. Said resource was farmed for the purpose that it could fulfill. There is something very dark and yet poetic about using the dead bodies of your countrymen to clean yourself and light your home at the end of a long day. Pretty brutal stuff. So I don't know if you guys have seen Fight Club, but it's kind of like that. They would take the fat from these humans and turn it into candles and soaps and perfumes. On this particular sunny day in Paris, the stench of death was hanging low on the city. The air was heavy with it. The sweet and rotting stench of deceased humans permeated from the walls all around the city. The sheer weight of body fluids and the chemical reactions caused by heat and decomposition were weighing heavily on every structure in Paris. It was not long before the dead weight would literally cause the city to implode. Indeed, stories of residents' basements being spontaneously flooded with hundreds of corpses were growing more and more frequent by the day. Citizens would wake up in the night to hear a horrible crashing sound in their cellars, only to rush down to find that the walls had busted in and dozens of bodies in various stages of decomposition now littered the lower reaches of their homes. Like, this is an issue that people actually had in Paris at this time. As if just by recalling this detail of everyday life, the soap salesman brought forth calamity. The great stone wall directly behind his booth suddenly began to groan and crumble. It was obvious that the thing was going to fall at any moment. Hurriedly, he grabbed as much as he could carry from his stand and fled the scene. And it wasn't a moment too soon either, because as he fled, the walls crashed to the square, spilling hundreds of bodies. Bodily fluid soaked the earth, and the stench caused the living to vomit uncontrollably. As blood, gore, bones, and body parts flowed over the cobblestones, the people fled in horror. Many had loved ones in this structure, and the hundreds of structures like it. Between this and the mass graves Paris had been utilizing for plague victims, guillotine executions, and innocents alike, the traumatic experience of seeing a decomposing relative rotting in some public place was growing ever more frequent. Like, Paris does not have the history that we would expect it to have. And honestly, like, I've heard that even today, if you go to Paris, there's like, you see the Eiffel Tower, but the rest of it is kind of messed up. I've never been to Paris. I have been to France. I was in France when Notre Dame burned, actually. I was about 2 hours away from Paris, but that's the only time I've been to France. The walls in the cellar of a restaurant owner located right next to the Innocents Cemetery would also break down in the 30th of May, 1780. The discovery of what will pour into the building's cellar will cause an unutterable horror. Cubic meters of old bones mixed with decomposing cadavers and tangled, putrefied mortal remains made the wall give way under the weight. The building is completely contaminated. Walls are oozing, and it is said that just days after putting a hand on the wall, a mason will catch gangrene. The same happens with the surrounding houses and streets. This cemetery, the Cemetery of the Innocents, like all other places in Paris, is a mass grave located only meters from apartment buildings, literally placed side by side with the cemeteries. There are bodies in Paris literally everywhere in the late 1700s. People, like, live among the dead. After situations like this became more commonplace, and with the largest cemetery in France, the Cemetery of the Innocents, containing some 2 million bodies, the King of France, Louis XVI, ordered a change to be made effective immediately. This mission would be inherited by his successor, as it would take longer than the remainder of his reign to conclude. Including the other places of burial, both above and below ground, there were 6 million bodies that would need to be moved. And I've heard people say that there were even more than that. There was upwards of 7 million bodies. This was no small undertaking, and it would take nearly 12 years to accomplish this daunting task of ridding Paris of the dead. And if they didn't, surely the whole place would fall to disease, and who knows what other curses. I mean, can you guys just imagine, like when I'm in town and I see trash on the side of the road, like I'm kind of like, ugh, why does nobody clean that up? But can you imagine, like, you're walking down the street and there's just human bodies, like, in wide open holes, like, everywhere you go, and, like, ditches and trenches, and you can, like, see them loading them into the walls of structures and stuff like that. Like, yeah. People back then had to just be so desensitized to death that stuff like that didn't literally scar them. But if we saw that kind of stuff today, I mean, I'm pretty sure that we would have a bunch of problems mentally, especially with how, like, sensitive everybody is today. If we saw literally millions of bodies lining our streets, I'm pretty sure that we wouldn't be able to handle that. Paris sat directly above some 200 miles of limestone tunnels that had been carved out to provide the very stones from which the city was built. The tunnels were so extensive that by the 19th century, the weight of the city above was creating giant sinkholes into which entire buildings and city blocks were literally collapsing. Like, they were, the city was falling into the holes that were there because of the quarries beneath the city that had been used to build the city above. So Paris is all sorts of messed up back in the 19th century. In 1777, the king's architect, Charles Axel Guillaumeau, was given the unenviable task of stabilizing the entire system of subterranean mine shafts in order to literally save the city from collapse. So this guy was sent down by the king to fortify the tunnels. So no pressure, but also at the same time, tons of pressure, if you know what I mean. Despite the size of the challenge, he pulled it off without much fuss. Wasn't that big of a deal. By 1785, the tunnels were stable, and the remains of dead Parisians were being dug up every single night and transferred into them. A priest accompanied every wagon load of remains in order to chant the Catholic Office of the Dead prayer to ensure that the remains remained at peace. A religious person, a priest, would have to go with every cartload because they were digging up the dead. Like, they were, like, digging all these people up and just sort of shoveling them and throwing them into the catacombs. So in order to sort of appease God in their minds, they would have to send priests with every single wagon load. Beginning with the Cemetery of the Innocents, which is that massive cemetery we've been talking about, it took the city 12 years to move all the bones from bodies numbering between 6 and 7 million people into the catacombs. Some of the oldest date back as far as the Merovingian era, more than 1,200 years ago. So everything from newly decapitated guillotine victims to literally ancient peoples were being chucked into the catacombs from the burial sites above ground in Paris. Beginning during the French Revolution, the dead were buried directly in the catacombs' ossuaries. Some famous or infamous characters from history who called the catacombs their final resting place include Jean-Paul Marat, one of the revolution's most radical voices, and Maximilien de Robespierre, sorry, I don't know how to say his name. I'm not very good at my French. An influential figure during both the Revolution and the subsequent Reign of Terror. The city stopped moving bones into the ossuaries in 1860, and a sign was placed in front of the most prominent entrance to the catacombs, warning people not to enter, for this was the Kingdom of the Dead. Now a portion of this kingdom can be witnessed for only $11 between the hours of like 8 and 5 Tuesday through Saturday. but the rest of the catacombs remain a frontier for only the boldest of explorers. Pretty crazy stuff. So, after about 12 years, finally they had taken all of the bodies from Paris and dumped them into the catacombs below, sort of kept part of it open so they could continue to throw people in until 1860. And then Paris started to improve a little bit above ground. They weren't having bodies everywhere. Around 1860, France was just like, okay, we're good now. We don't need to put any more bodies into these catacombs. And so they stopped putting bodies into the catacombs, or at least stopped moving bones from, like, graves they were digging up. Man, I just can't even imagine, like, trying to live in that kind of environment where you're just... I mean, people had to probably have been surrounded by bodies, like, literally and figuratively all the time. Like, what kind of environment was this creating for the people who just had to function and live their lives as a normal person in Paris at this time? You probably saw corpses every single day. Like, literally, you probably saw dead bodies every single day wherever you went. Evil relating to the dead, however, continued because grave robbing and necromancy abounded. This is interesting, but a lot of the... It's kind of... Without special permission, it's kind of illegal to buy human bones and to sell human bones. And a lot of illegal bone sales come from Paris because of all of the bones in the catacombs. If you buy a skull that maybe you shouldn't be buying online, there's a good chance that it actually came from the catacombs. It's been said that if you go down there, it's kind of hard to find skulls because people go and take them. So grave robbing and necromancy was a big deal during this time. And necromancy, in its macabre essence, is the art of conjuring the forbidden, a sinister dance with the shadows where the living trespass into the realm of the dead. It is a blasphemous symphony where incantations echo through desolate graveyards and the scent of decay intertwines with the whispers of forgotten souls. Practitioners wield the unholy power to disturb the slumber of the deceased. Through arcane rituals, they beckon the departed from their cold, silent resting places. The dark arts manipulate the boundary between life and death, leaving a trail of malevolent energies that taint the very air with an unnatural chill. The necromancer is usually clad in tattered robes. He channels the morbid energies of the deceased. This is a very flamboyant definition of necromancy, but essentially, the Romans and Greeks thought spirits only knew as much as they did when they were alive, right? And that made them only marginally useful as a source of information. But regardless, necromancers would essentially try to bring the dead back to life in order to learn the secrets from the past. You could ask them personal information, but not really for prophecies about the wider world, because the dead hadn't been alive in the future, so they don't really know what's going to go on in the future. But other cultures thought that the dead did gain access to all knowledge once they passed over. In the Bible, for instance, Saul asks the witch of Endor to raise Samuel, the prophet, for advice on dealing with the Philistines. She does so, and Samuel predicts that Saul and his army will die in battle. Saul goes ahead with the battle anyway and commits suicide when his army loses. By the medieval period, necromancy was adopted by magicians seeking knowledge. For them, this new science was also a way to influence others, often using illusions. It does sound nefarious, but these magicians wanted to find lost things and solve crimes. It's generally not encouraged to talk to the dead, and especially not to do magic with the dead. But you know, this isn't just a thing of the past. Necromancy is still a huge thing today in a lot of cultures where civilization is not as dominating. So this is like a very real thing that people engage in various parts of the world. So now the bodies that were mostly rotted away and many bones smuggled out for illegal sale by grave robbers and bone harvesters, necromancy is kind of at a minimum in Paris. It's not exactly a huge deal in Paris anymore. I'm sure there is still necromancy going on, and, you know, in a world surrounded by the dead, you're always going to have those people who have some kind of gravitational pull to that. Witchcraft and other evils still abound in the depths, however. There are people who go down there for the sake of witchcraft, to do witchcraft. And there's an abundance of rituals that goes on in the depths. So now we've got a little bit of history on the catacombs in Paris. It's time to kind of describe this landscape. Like, what does it look like? What are these catacombs? How did they get there? Why are they still there? And how do I get in? Like, right? Like, I think that's probably how everybody is probably thinking. Like, how do you get into the catacombs if, you know, if they're hidden, if they're deep beneath ground? But there are essentially holes in random places, whether it's manholes, cracks in walls. Like, I'm saying holes because it's literally like that. Like, it's like you can be walking along a train track and there's like this little tiny itty bitty cave that you have to crawl through, and if you do, you're in the catacombs. Like, it's like that. And these things are popping up. There's hidden ones, there's ones nobody's ever heard of before or seen before or mapped or anything like that, because the catacombs beneath Paris are literally an ever-changing labyrinth, and it spans hundreds of miles in every direction. There's no way for the authorities to block every single entrance. The catacombs have never been fully mapped, and such an undertaking is absolutely impossible due to the fact that the private parties who are going down there are continually changing the subterranean landscape by adding new tunnels, new rooms and caverns, and connecting places that have previously been unconnected. Like, because the stone is sort of soft, it's manipulable. It's these people, regular people, can go down there with hammers and chisels and literally make new rooms and make new passageways. New places are constantly being discovered in the catacombs. Whether it be the discovery of rooms, caverns, or routes from one to the other, there is absolutely no shortage of new areas to discover deep below Paris. The unique society that lives both part-time and full-time beneath the city streets ensures that the subterranean world changes just as often and drastically as the world above. As they say, as above, so below. Great movie on the catacombs, by the way. If you guys want to see a found footage horror film that, in my opinion, is a cut above the rest, check out As Above, So Below, because it is, it takes place in the Paris catacombs, and it is a great movie. Cataphiles are the people who, these are the people who explore the catacombs on a regular basis. They are sort of like the ones that are known for exploring the catacombs. And when I reference the society that lives part-time and full-time in the catacombs, cataphiles definitely make up part of that society. They will sometimes spend days down there. But I think it's also possible that there is a society much more removed from civilization that also could possibly live down in the catacombs, in the far reaches where people don't really go or don't even know that the catacombs go in the first place. I think it's completely possible with everything that we see happening at the hands of these cataphiles. They're able to manipulate the catacombs and change routes and build rooms and all that kind of stuff. With all that apparent and obvious before our eyes, just by entering the catacombs for a brief period, who knows what's going on in the far reaches of the catacombs and who lives there? I'm sure somebody does. These cataphiles, and perhaps even a long-lost tribe that lives down there, continue to maintain hold on this world beneath the surface, ensuring that it remains the Wild West of the underworld. Due to the rapidly changing nature of the catacombs, maps, regardless of how new they are, can be very unreliable. Adventurers have even reported being in the underground labyrinth for mere hours, only to discover that the route that they had taken into this place had changed by the time they attempt to leave it. An unknown amount of people have been sealed in thanks to the rapid changes in the routes in and out of the catacombs, resulting in both deaths and injuries. Absolutely nothing is considered consistent or reliable, and the catacombs are generally considered highly dangerous and therefore are legally off limits. So, pretty crazy stuff. I don't know if the authorities don't really report the deaths that take place in the catacombs, or not many deaths are occurring in the catacombs in the first place. I don't really know much about the missing persons situation in Paris, but it doesn't seem like many deaths are reported in the catacombs, which I thought was interesting while I was researching this. It actually doesn't seem like many terrible crimes are committed, period, in the catacombs. There are some, and there are some creepy things that go on, but like you don't hear a lot about murders or kidnappings or trafficking or anything like that in the catacombs. And that's one thing that I would really expect to hear a lot about down there. But because of this society of cataphiles and who knows who else down there, it's said that the place is reasonably not deadly as long as you don't get lost. You just have to make sure that you know where you are and where you're going, and that if you don't, you're with somebody who does. That's why a lot of people who go there from out of the country, they have to find a guide, a very experienced guide who's able to take them into the catacombs, because getting lost is the number one way to die. So at this point, we're probably thinking, like, how are they able to dig rooms and tunnels beneath the surface of Paris? We're constantly talking about, like, inner earth and living underground and stuff, and it always seems so impossible. But meanwhile, you have these people down here who are doing this every single day and are able to do it with reasonable ease. How is that possible? Well, we have to do a little bit of a history lesson to begin that conversation. But when you already have an extensive quarry network beneath the surface, that does make things a little bit easier. Paris had 18 quarries during 1292, and the first written act concerning any mine dates from almost a century later, 1373. So we've already got mines. They're using the mines to build Paris, essentially. That's where these caverns came from in the first place. The majority of Paris's limestone deposits were in the left bank, and at the time of the city populace's 10th century move to the right bank, were well in the suburbs of the former Roman Merovingian city. As the stone from abandoned ruins became depleted during the 13th century, new mines began to open further from the city center. The monks renovated the caverns under this property into wine cellars and continued the exploitation of stone to the ancient mine's extremities. So what we're seeing are people are even beginning to use the mines, which would later become the catacombs. They're converting them into cellars and basements and places to store stuff that aren't just bodies. They're becoming part of the city. There was basically mines everywhere that were carved out to build Paris and for plaster and for the stone. So we've already got an extensive network of mines and roadways and caverns that are below the surface, and there's even places where the people who would mine would like eat and collect water. There's wells down there, for instance, like stuff like that, where people can, like, workers would work and be able to stay down for long periods of time so that they could effectively mine this place. So you can imagine how, after decades of that, because, I mean, we're talking back to the Roman era, there's already an extensive network down there. I think a lot of people are kind of confused about how the catacombs came to be. They weren't built for the bodies. They were there because the stone from the mines was used to build Paris, and then Paris sort of began to sprawl out and become this massive city and was therefore built over the mines. And as we kind of already said, it got to the point where the city was starting to fall into the mines because the roof of the mines was not able to hold the city above it. And as the centuries of mining under Paris's underground were mostly uncharted and thus largely forgotten, the real extent of former mines is completely unknown. All important buildings and roadways were inspected, any signs of shiftings were noted, and the ground underneath was sounded for cavities to sort of put it to rest that there were caverns down there. They were making the surface safer. Roadways were particularly problematic, however. Instead of sounding the ground around the route, inspectors instead tunneled directly under the length of endangered roadways, filling any cavities they found along the way, and reinforcing the walls of the tunnels with solid masonry to eliminate the possibility of any future excavations and disasters. When a length of roadway was consolidated, the date of the work was engraved in the tunnel wall under it, next to the name of the roadway above. Paris's tunnel renovations, dating to as early as 1777, are now still a testimony to Paris's old street names and roadways. And that's part of how these cataphiles are able to map the catacombs, is by looking at these signs that are essentially underground in the catacombs that tell where they are in relation to the world above. So that's kind of how the catacombs came to be, and that's why they are considered sort of safe, I guess you could say, when it comes to structural integrity. That's how these cataphiles are able to dig new rooms and tunnels, is because the whole place is kind of fortified. Through the ages, the catacombs have harbored a pretty eclectic lot, as can be imagined. In the 13th century, bandits hid under the Luxembourg Gardens, and sorcerers used the quarries for black mass during the 1348 plague. Gives you kind of a picture of how ancient these places are. St. Denis was even said to give mass in the quarries during the Christian persecution. And during World War II, resistance fighters used the network as hideouts to strategize and launch counterattacks on the Nazis. And obviously, of course, there's still scoundrels down there in the underworld. People have been caught stealing telephone cables and piping to sell the copper by the kilo, because, as you can imagine, when businesses on the surface need to run their cables or run their piping underground, there's a pretty good chance they're going to hit part of the catacombs. And because of that, their piping and their wiring is going to be exposed to whoever's in the catacombs. And some of those people don't have the best intentions, and they'll just rob the copper and sell it. There's also still an extensive network of illegal bone harvesters who will go down there, harvest the human bones, and sell them online or sell them in shops for witchcraft purposes or whatever the case is. These are kind of the main criminal acts that go on in the catacombs. Nowadays, there are reportedly somewhere around 300 accesses to the quarries, but new entryways are constantly being uncovered as well as created by enterprising explorers. When you ask the authorities how many entrances there are today, one particular police official said, you know, there are those I know of and there are those that I don't. They spend a lot of money every year trying to keep people out of the catacombs or rescuing people who are lost in the catacombs. And so to sort of save face a little bit, they try to act like they have some hold on where the entrances and exits are, but the fact of the matter is they just don't really know. Secret societies have always been a part of conspiracy theories and widely recognized as myths, but not on this podcast. So there is a functioning underground society that stakes claim to the deep regions of the Parisian catacombs. And we've already talked about the cataphiles, but it goes a little bit further than that. Police in Paris discovered a fully equipped cinema and restaurant in a large and previously uncharted cavern. Officers admit that they are at a loss to know who built or used one of Paris's most intriguing recent discoveries. "We have no idea whatsoever," a police spokesman said. There were two swastikas painted on the ceiling, but also Celtic crosses and several stars of David, so we don't think it's extremists. Some sect or secret society, maybe. There are any number of possibilities. And this was essentially found just across from the Eiffel Tower while on a training exercise. After entering the network through a drain, the officers came across a sign that said building site, no access. And behind that, a tunnel held a desk and a closed circuit TV camera set to automatically record images of anyone passing. The mechanism also triggered a tape of dogs barking, clearly designed to frighten people off. A smaller cave next door had been turned into an informal restaurant and bar. There were bottles of whiskey and other spirits behind the bar, tables and chairs, a pressure cooker for making couscous, even, a spokesman said. The whole thing ran off a professionally installed electricity system, and there were at least three phone lines down there. 3 days later, when the police returned, accompanied by experts from the French Electricity Board, to see where the power was coming from, the phone and electricity lines had been cut, and everything had been removed, and there was a note lying in the middle of the floor saying, "Do not try to find us." Crazy. Since 1955, for security reasons, it has been an offense to penetrate into or circulate within the rest of the network down there, like the electrical network, which is why they had people from the electrical companies go down to see where exactly these individuals who made this fully functioning theater and restaurant with phone lines and closed circuit camera systems, like where were they getting this power from? There exist, however, as they're saying, several secret bands of so-called cataphiles who gain access to the tunnels mainly after dark through drains and ventilation shafts and hold what in the popular imagination have become drunken orgies, but are, by all accounts, innocent underground picnics. The recent discovery of three newly enlarged tunnels underneath the Capitol's high security La Santé prison was put down to the activities of one such group, and another identifying itself as the Perforating Mexicans. Last night told French radio the subterranean cinema was its work. And this group is part of a bigger group known as the UX. Patrick Ulk, a photographer who has published a book on the urban underground exploration movement, the UX, and claims to be close to the group, told RTL Radio the cavern's discovery was a shame, but not the end of the world. There were a dozen more where that one came from, he said. You guys have no idea what's going on down there. So, as we can see, as much as people would like to say, such as the authorities, that there's nothing really going on down there, there very much is stuff going on down there. And I've even heard that this UX group will have film festivals, they'll have feasts, they'll have all sorts of, not witchcraft, but like rituals and meetings and organized get-togethers down in the catacombs in these massive rooms that they've effectively built and brought electricity into and brought power and phone lines and all and internet, even all that stuff down into the catacombs. It's pretty crazy what this group is capable of. The UX has been known to refurbish and repair ancient places in Paris for many years, and without any recognition or request for financing. These guys will literally just walk around the Paris underground until they find a location where they can infiltrate buildings, like historic buildings that need repairs or need refurbishment, and then they will break into those places and repair and refurbish the building and then vanish without a trace. And they'll never be compensated. A lot of times the police actually hunt for them because what they're doing is technically illegal, even though it's a service to mankind. They have even broken into the most heavily guarded museums in Paris through their extensive knowledge of the underground just to inform and aid the security of said museums by leaving cryptic messages within the security director's offices of how they accomplish such feats so that they may be remedied immediately. The UX sort of assists these museums unofficially by being like, hey, so we were able to break into your museum. This is how we did it. This is how we bypassed your security measures. You might want to get that fixed so that these other guys who aren't necessarily good guys don't do the same thing and steal all the Picassos. Information collected on the UX points to the fact that they have an extensive network of highly wealthy and qualified individuals, including artists, stoneworkers, electricians, engineers, clockmakers, and tacticians. The group is extremely secretive and quiet about their whereabouts and operations, but definitely one of the more famous and revered. Certain reports and stories spread through word of mouth have pointed toward their activity, but a large part of their functioning remains unknown. What has made much of this work possible is UX's mastery, established 30 years ago and refined since, of the city's network of underground passageways. Hundreds of miles of interconnected telecom, electricity, and water tunnels, sewers, catacombs, subways, and centuries-old quarries. Like computer hackers who crack digital networks and take control of key machines, members of UX carry out clandestine missions throughout Paris's supposedly secure underground tunnels and rooms. The group routinely uses the tunnels to access restoration sites and stage film festivals, for example, in the disused basements of government buildings. UX's most sensational caper to be revealed so far, at least, was completed in 2006. A cadre spent months infiltrating the Pantheon, the grand structure in Paris that houses the remains of France's most cherished citizens. Eight restorers built their own secret workshop in a storeroom, which they wired for electricity and internet access and outfitted with armchairs, tools, a refrigerator, and even a hot plate. During the course of a year, they painstakingly restored the Pantheon's 19th century clock, which had not chimed since the 1960s, and nobody knew about this. Those in the neighborhood must have been shocked to hear the clock sound for the first time in decades, on the hour, the half hour, and the quarter hour. The group that sort of restored the clock, and I'll throw some pictures up on the screen for you guys to see, was called the Untergunther, which is sort of a branch of the UX. They're like affiliating groups. So we can see how expensive and capable this secret underground society truly is. Like, these people, they even provided the parts for this clock to be repaired, you know, and the fact that they're able to build underground theaters and somehow smuggle all of this stuff into the underground, break into museums, all this kind of stuff. We're talking about a very masterful group of individuals who are pretty much able to bypass security measures on the surface. It's really, really crazy. So all of this to say, we have no idea what could possibly be in the depths of the catacombs, because you've got a reason that these people may have places down there that are just completely unseen because they don't want them to be seen. They're obviously a highly secretive group. Police do infiltrate the catacombs from time to time and attempt to find people who are doing illegal things. They've got to have places down there that just nobody has ever seen. And how amazing could those possibly be? But the masterful artists and visionaries of the UX are not the only individuals to inhabit and utilize the catacombs. It's important to remember. Rival groups of tunnel crawlers scour the depths. There are horror stories of how the most sinister of these groups will actually run up to hapless explorers, snatch their headlamps and maps, and then run off into the darkness, leaving an unknown number of adventurers to meet their fate in the never-ending tomb that they seek to explore for pleasure. And if that's not the most horrifying thing you can imagine, I don't know what is. Imagine you're just walking down a tunnel, however far, you're hundreds of feet below the surface, maybe, and surrounded by human bones, and you've never been here before. It's just like you and a couple buddies, and you've got your headlamp and your map, and then all of a sudden, some dude runs out of the darkness, grabs your flashlight and map, and then just disappears into the darkness again, leaving you there. There are an unknown amount of sophisticated and fascinating art features, both painted on the walls and carved out of stone in the catacombs. There are corridors and rooms carved with sophisticated designs. Part of the turf wars that occur deep within the underground sometimes result in these rooms and passageways being completely destroyed out of spite and contempt between groups or individuals. There's been stories of these groups and these people who will spend however long it takes. I'm not a mason or something. I don't know how long it takes to build these rooms or corridors. But they'll spend all this time building these places only to leave and to return to find it completely destroyed by rivaling groups. Police are even said to have made secret alliances with some of these groups in order to keep some semblance of grip on justice in the underworld. These treaties involved the cataphiles reporting crimes or lost individuals to the police on the surface. Usually this is done through cryptic means that prevent the identities of the cataphiles being known to the authorities. It is said, however, that YouTubers and those with cameras who seek to document and record the vast expanse of the catacombs for their own records or financial gain will have their cameras stolen or destroyed by the cataphiles, and the owners of such equipment will be met with fierce violence and adversity. They are considered a threat to the way of life beneath the surface. Music is generally a sign that you are peaceful and mean no ill will to fellow travelers. This is especially true among the secretive society of the cataphiles. By playing some sort of tune as you traverse the catacombs, others will know that you are not the police or some content creators looking to cause a mess of the sacred places within the abyss or record it for your own financial gain or to show to the authorities. It is important to remember that these halls of the dead bear significant historical relevance and hold the stories of over 6 million souls. And there are those cataphiles who seek to protect this. There is no place for the disrespectful or intentionally ignorant. If one does not seek to make peace with the cataphiles that patrol the far reaches of this abyss, one can only hope to have the ghosts on their side. One such ghost immediately comes to mind. He is largely considered a lost soul's last hope. And he is said to walk the catacombs to this day, despite the fact that he went missing and was later found dead in the catacombs in 1793. And that will be our first topic on Thursday. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I hope you liked this episode and are just as excited as I am for part two, where we will be talking about a couple stories that I've come across and know that take place in the catacombs We're also going to look at some of the cooler places that exist in the catacombs that have been found and how they were formed and came to be. We've got some of the more interesting stuff coming up in part two. So I'm really excited to share that with you, and I will see you guys on Thursday. Please don't forget to like, follow, share, subscribe, rate, do all the stuff you do to help us stay in the algorithm. I greatly appreciate all of the help. And if you guys have a friend who you think is interested in this kind of content, please do not hesitate to share the podcast with them. Remember, don't drink the water and question everything. Later.